नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 15. Tan no bhavan vai bhagavat pradano mahatmaikanta parayanasya harir udaram charitam vishudam Shushushatam no vitanotu vidvan tano bhavan vai bhagavat pradano mahatmakai kanta parayanasya hari udaram charitam vishudam Shashushatam no vitanotu vidvan Tano bhavan vai bhagavad pradano Mahata maikanta parayanasya Adi udaram charitam vishudam Shashushatam no vitanotu vidvan. Please chant. Mounted use. Okay. Word for word translation. Tat, therefore, naha, of us, bhavan, your good self, vai, certainly, bhagavat, in relation with the personality of Godhead. Pradana, chiefly, mahatama, the greatest of all greats. Ekanta, exclusively, parayanasya, of the shelter. Harir, of the Lord. Udaram, impartial. Charitam, activities. Vishuddham, transcendental. Shushushitam, those who are receptive. Na, ourselves. Vitanotu, kindly describe. Vidvan, O learned one. You see the word charitam is activities, so Chaitanya Charitamrita is the nectarian activities of Lord Chaitanya. Charitam. Okay, translation. O Sutta Goswami, you are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord, because the personality of Godhead is your chief object of service. Therefore, please describe to us the pastimes of the Lord, which are above all material conception, for we are anxious to receive such messages. Purport. The speaker on the transcendental activities of the Lord should have only one object of worship and service, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The audience for such topic should be anxious to hear about him. When such a combination is possible, namely a qualified speaker and a qualified audience, it is then and there very much congenial to continue discourses on the transcendence. Professional speakers and a materially absorbed audience cannot derive real benefit from such discourses. Professional speakers make a show of Bhagavat Saptaha for the sake of family maintenance, and the materially disposed audience hears such discourses of Bhagavat Saptaha for some material benefit, namely religiosity, wealth, gratification of the senses, or liberation. Such Bhagavatam discourses are not purified from the contamination of the material qualities, but the discourses between the saints of Naimisharanya and Sri Sutta Goswami are on the transcendental level. There is no motive for material gain. In such discourses, unlimited transcendental pleasure is relished both by the audience and by the speaker, and therefore they can continue the topics for many thousands of years. Now Bhagavat Saptahas are held for 7 days only, and after finishing the show, both the audience and the speaker become engaged in material activities as usual. They can do so because the speaker is not Bhagavat Pradana, and the audience is not Shushushitam, as explained above, and Bhagavat Pradana. If we go back, means in relation to the personality of Godhead, so the speaker should be focused on his worship and meditation on Krishna, and the audience should be Shushushitam, which means receptive, with open ears, eager to hear. Om Ajnanati Mindasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitamina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vanchakapatirubhishta Kripa Sindhubi Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavimbhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll read the verse one more time. Tano Bhavanvai Bhagavat Pradano Mahat Makanta Parayanasya. Hari udaram charitam vishudam shushushatam no pitano tuvidvan. O Suta Goswami, you are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord, because the personality of Godhead is your chief object of service. Therefore, please describe to us the pastimes of the Lord, which are above all material conception, for we are anxious to receive such messages. Okay. Thank you for coming this morning, Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam, the sages of Naimisharanya are glorifying Suta Goswami, and they're calling him a learned and pure devotee of the Lord. And as well as Srila Prabhupada in his purport, describing the qualification of the speaker of the Bhagavatam, and in the purport also explains the qualification of the hearer of the Bhagavatam. And in, Krishna also says this in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter. He says that those this confidential knowledge should not be shared with those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor should it be shared to those who are envious of Krishna. And even in one purport in the 3rd chapter, Prabhupada explains that it's better just to go on with your own Krishna conscious practice and not waste valuable time with approaching the ignorant people. But Prabhupada there says that the devotees are actually more kind than the Lord, because they go out with great risk and approach the ignorant men trying to engage them in devotional service, even if that affects their own sadhana, their own bhajan. They go out and take that risk, and that's actually extremely dear to Krishna, more so than doing your own personal practice only. And we hear from the Chaitanya Charitamrita also a few verses ago in the purport how by a single moment of association with a pure devotee can actually bring all perfection. Actually, it says half a moment. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the exact word is nimesha, which actually means the time it takes for your eyes to blink. Unknowingly, when you blink your eyes, that amount of time spent with the pure devotee can bring all perfection if one is receptive. You see, so many people got association from Prabhupada, like he would give classes at universities, and students would be hearing his lecture, but how many of them surrendered? So it also takes a qualified, receptive hearer, a fertile heart, for that that seed of bhakti to grow. So if you think, I was thinking about this verse in the 18th chapter that I just said, where Krishna says that this knowledge shouldn't be explained to those who are not austere, etc. But then, again, Prabhupada wanted mass book distribution, mass harinam, mass preaching. And I was thinking one quote when Prabhupada said that even if they touch the book, or even if they read one page, and then he said even one sentence, and then he even said even if they read one word, that can bring one perfection. So I was thinking, if you open up any page and you start a sentence, and if somebody read one word, the only word they read might be the, you know, because it's just the personality of Godhead, but he reads one word, the. So how does this bring one eligible to bring one perfection? It's because Prabhupada, as a pure devotee, all his words are saturated with Krishna prema. They're coming straight from Goloka Vrindavan. So if one is receptive, even that word the can impact the heart, because it has a purpose. It's trying to inject Krishna prema within somebody's heart. So the audience should also be anxious to hear. Remember, Radha Swami was saying in a class that when the audience is anxious and eager to understand, then the super soul within the heart of the speaker will actually say the exact words that the person listening needs to hear. And vice versa. I remember Brigupati Prabhu in a class, he was describing one purport where Prabhupada is saying, if the desire of the pure devotee is to enlighten the world, then Krishna within the heart of the living entities will become inspired to hear from that person and surrender to Krishna. So even one-on-one conversations, I've had personal experience where someone's asking me a question and I'm answering and I don't know where these answers are coming from. And it's just, it actually like blows my mind also. And I'm thinking like maybe I should record the answer so I can listen to it later. And maybe I should follow what I'm saying. You know, it's like Paramatmas can speak through you if you're trying to surrender and trying to be sincere. So I had this personal experience one time. My good friend, Kashma Prabhu, we were taking prasadam together. And he was revealing his mind to me, you know, just about life and some difficulty he was going through and some confusion he had. And I was actually paying attention. I was really listening. But also, I ate all the prasadam, so my plate was empty. And a server was going around and serving others. And just for like a quick moment, I turned my head from Akashma Prabhu when he was speaking to me. And I was looking when the server was going to come. And I can tell just from that moment of turning my head affected the whole conversation. He thought that I wasn't paying attention to him. And I could tell by the tone of his voice, he lost interest in speaking, actually. It kind of like the conversation was done and we started talking about something else. But that's the effect of how people are actually sensitive. You know, like when you're speaking on the Vyasa sign, you can see the whole audience. So you can see who's attentive, who's falling asleep, or who's spacing out. And according to the reception, receptivity of the audience, it can either inspire the speaker or actually like diminish his inspiration. He may not be very inspired to talk anymore. So I was reading yesterday, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was explaining how he became a Vaishnava by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And usually, to call yourself a Vaishnava, it's a very high position to be a Vaishnava. It's something that we're aspiring to be, pure Vaishnavas. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, is by the mercy of Lord Gauranga that I became a Vaishnava. So it wasn't false pride or false humility. It was actually true humility, because he was showing that even by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, even a fallen person like me can become a Vaishnava. So in the same way, only by the mercy of our spiritual master and the mercy of Lord Chaitanya are we able to speak on the Bhagavatam? Are we able to engage in devotional service? Bhakti Vinod Thakur says in that song, Oh Hey Vaishnav Thakur, says the spiritual master possesses Krishna, and the spiritual master is able to give Krishna to whoever he wants. So I am simply running after you. This fallen wretch is simply running after you, crying out, Krishna, Krishna. So it's only by the mercy of the spiritual master. This is true humility, and this is true glorification of the spiritual master. He can convert someone like me into a, or any of us, into pure saints, into pure Vaishnavas. So in the verse, the first sentence, the O Suta Goswami, you're a learned and pure devotee of the Lord, because the personality of Godhead is your chief object of service. So there's different definitions of a pure devotee. You know, we have the Nitya Siddhas, Sadhana Siddhas, Kripa Siddhas. You know, someone could be on the level of Prema or Baba or just have pure intentions. It's like Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Goswami once asked Prabhupada, are there any other pure devotees other than yourself on this planet? And his response was, how many devotees are in our movement? And he gave a number, and he said, that's how many pure devotees are in the world. So we may still have anarthas. We still may have material desire within our heart. But if our intention is pure, and we're trying to purely serve, and we're fully engaged, then that's also a definition of a pure devotee. Just like the mango may not be ripe, still may be green, but it's still a mango. It's just a matter of time that it's going to be ripe. In the same way, there's different definitions of self-realization. Like on one hand, one can say aham brahmasmi, which means that I am Brahman. And that's correct. That's one perspective. We're not the material body. We have nothing to do with this material world. We are Brahman. To give a step further, you could say jivera sarupyohoi krishnara nitya das, that not only am I a Brahman, but the living entity is a servant of Krishna eternally. But still, that's a little bit of a vague concept. Because you can say that for anybody, a tree, an insect, yeah, we're all servants of Krishna. But even a step further is to realize your eternal position in the spiritual world, you know, your relationship with Krishna, your spiritual body. So there's different definitions. In the second sentence of the translation, the sages of Namasharanya say, therefore, please describe to us the pastimes of the Lord, which are above all material conception, for we are anxious to receive such messages. You see, when the audience is receptive, then the speaker can speak fully. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning, Arjuna gave so many excuses why he didn't want to fight. And Krishna didn't really say anything to him, or he didn't instruct him, because Arjuna wasn't ready yet. He didn't take the humble position. He was just making excuses based on his mental speculation. But until the seventh verse of chapter 2, and Arjuna finally surrenders and considers himself a disciple of Krishna, and that's when Krishna starts instructing him. And Krishna also gives the definition or the process of surrender in the fourth chapter when he says that inquire from a spiritual master, render service unto him, approach him submissively and humbly. And the new translations, it says the great souls can impart knowledge unto you. The souls, there's an S at the end, which is plural, because when we address Guru, we're addressing the whole parampara. And actually, Prabhupada says this in the introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, talking about Krishna Das Kaviraj. He says that in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he offers his respects. He says, my spiritual masters, with an S at the end, plural. And Prabhupada says right here, he uses the plural here to indicate the disciplic succession. He offers obeisances not only to his spiritual master, but the entire parampara. And thus the author addresses the guru in the plural to show the highest respect for all his predecessor's spiritual masters. And then after offering obeisances and respects to the spiritual master, he pays obeisances to all the other devotees and to Krishna himself, to all his incarnations, to the expansions of Godhead, and to the manifestation of Krishna's internal energy. So when we come into the temple, actually the proper etiquette is you're supposed to knock first before you come in, to let Krishna know, hey, I'm coming in. I hope you don't mind. And you're actually supposed to chant Jai Radha Govinda, or it's supposed to say Jai Radha something. It says this in the Nectar of Devotion. Either Jai Radha Govinda, Jai Radha Shama Sundar. I'm sure here it would be appropriate to say Jai Shishi Rukmini Dwarkadish, of course. And then you pay your obeisances. And my understanding is when you first come in and you're paying your obeisances, you're paying your obeisances to Krishna's abode and all the living entities within that abode, paying obeisances to the Vaishnavas. You come here, you offer your respects to the spiritual master, and then to Gaurini Thai, Rukmini Dorkadi, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra after. So there's a process of even paying obeisances. Not that one goes to Krishna directly. I see that a lot when people come in, like usually Indian body people, they may not understand the philosophy so well. They like ignore Prabhupada completely and they just go straight to the altar. And it kind of like hurts my heart when I see that you know, they don't know any better. I mean, it's better than not coming to the temple at all, but still they're not getting the full effect of first paying obeisances to the pure devotee of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada says in that book, Searching for the Ultimate Goal of Life, he says that the Shiksha and the Diksha gurus are non-different. And he explains that both of them are the object for our shelter and connects us with eternal loving service to Krishna. And he also explains to think that one spiritual master is more pure than the other spiritual master is actually offensive. And he goes on to explain that the symbolic Diksha guru is Sanatan Goswami because he connects one with the service of Shishi Radha Madan Mohan. And the symbolic Shiksha guru is Srila Rupa Goswami because through his teachings, he's teaching eternal service to Radha Govinda, like that. So, and he also explains that no one should think that Sanatana Goswami is more pure than Rupa Goswami or vice versa. You know, this is a foolish way of thinking. So when Lord Chaitanya would offer obeisances to the spiritual master, Prabhupada says he was thinking his Shiksha guru and his Diksha gurus, or Diksha guru and Shiksha gurus. And Lord Chaitanya also explains in that same book who's truly a guru, who's qualified as an acharya. And he says that whoever's conversant with the science of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada explains here that not the professional speakers who make a show of Bhagavad Saptaha for sake of family maintenance, but one who has pure intentions. And just like Lord Chaitanya, he went to Ramananda Roy for the highest knowledge, the highest revelations and realizations. And Lord Chaitanya was born in a Brahmana family, and he was a sannyasi. But Ramananda Roy was a Shudra by caste, and he was a Grihastha. So it goes to show that these material considerations of ashram and varna are transcended if one is completely dependent and surrendered to Krishna. Whoever is conversing with Krishna, that's who we want to hear from. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the beginning, in the Adi Lila, it explains that the spiritual master is a manifestation of Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu, of course, we understand, is the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. And he only wants one thing from us, which is surrender. And he only wants to give us one thing, which is Krishna Prema. So this is the bona fide guru. He doesn't want anything for himself. There's no selfish motive. He only wants to give Krishna Prema to the living entity. And Krishna acts as the spiritual master in Bhagavad Gita. And in the whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna only asks Arjuna three questions. And one of them is in the second chapter. And he's inquiring from him, how have these impurities come upon you? It is it doesn't make sense that a great personality like you has become fallen into illusion. And then, once Krishna realizes that Arjuna is a little bit in Maya, Krishna gives the whole Bhagavad Gita. And then at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, he asks the other two questions. And Krishna asks, are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? And then, is your ignorance now dispelled? Are your illusions now dispelled? And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that Krishna, because he's acting as guru, it's his duty to inquire from Arjuna whether he has understood the whole Bhagavad Gita properly. And he goes on to say that if Arjuna didn't understand, Krishna was ready to re-explain any point or even the whole Bhagavad Gita if necessary. So this is a true friend, you know, not just wanting to benefit the other person with no selfish desire. This is true love. And we understand that pure love of Krishna is within our heart, like Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, It's within the heart. It just has to be awakened. So similarly, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, it explains also that all Vedic knowledge is within the heart, and it just has to be awakened. And it's natural for everyone to reawaken this Vedic knowledge that's dormant within the heart of every jiva soul. And that one verse in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, that by rendering devotional service, causeless knowledge and detachment is awakened immediately within the heart. So by rendering devotional service to Krishna, the spiritual master, who is an external representation of Paramatma, can actually enlighten you within the heart. Now, he opens our darkened eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, even if he's not physically present. If we're engaging in his vani, his instructions, that knowledge that's already within our heart is awakened. So just like that one story where that person came to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur with a bunch of questions, and so he went to his disciple. His disciple went to Bhaktisiddhanta, said, "This man has questions. He was wondering if he can meet with you." Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur told the disciple, "Tell the man to wait a little bit. I'm busy. I'll come and I'll answer his questions. But for now, can he do some service? Can he go wash some pots?" So this man very happily went and washed some pots, waiting for Bhaktisiddhanta to finish whatever he was doing. Then when the time came, he saw Bhaktivedanta Sarasvati Maharaj. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, "Okay, what questions do you have?" And the man said, "Actually, just through washing the pots, all my questions were answered." So this is a practical proof that engaging in devotional service, you get the answers within your heart. Even Prabhupada said sometimes, like, if you have questions, you can go in front of the deity, express your mind, and ask the deity. And if Krishna desires, he'll reveal that within your heart. The spiritual master may even come in dreams in different forms and give instructions, or different Vaishnavas, or even Krishna himself. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared to Srila Prabhupada in his dreams and told him to take sannyas so he can preach the message. He came a couple times, actually, until Prabhupada was convinced that this is what he should do. And in the same way, Prabhupada came to Bhakti Tirtha Swami in a dream. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami was dreaming. Prabhupada came, and there was a door. And he paid his obeisances to Prabhupada. He got up, and Prabhupada said, "Open the door." And Bhakti Tirtha Swami didn't know what was going on. And he repeated a few times, "Just open the door." And so he opened the door, and there were a rush of African people, like thousands of African people running through the door. And he had this realization that, "Oh, Prabhupada wants me to go to Africa and preach." So he went to Africa after that and was extremely successful. And now so many devotees in Africa, disciples of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, because of Prabhupada instructing him within a dream. There's many stories that I've heard from senior book distributors where they were distributing books in airports. And although Prabhupada was physically present in the same city or just like a few hours away, they preferred to stay at the airport and distributing books. And they said that they felt more of Prabhupada's presence by doing that service than if they were to go to the temple and try to get his personal association. There was a special rasa because they were engaging in something that was very dear to him. So one shouldn't feel bad if the vapu, or the physical association of the spiritual master, is limited. Because even if the spiritual master glances upon us, that is extreme mercy. The fact that he has given us initiation is extreme mercy. He has initiated us with Maha Mantra. This topic of being eager to receive knowledge and inspiring the speaker to speak knowledge is even there in ordinary dealings. We could see that just like a few words can either like break or make a relationship. There's a few harsh words can cause tension, whereas a few loving words can cause, you know, a more tighter friendship. and inspiration. I remember hearing how, well, obviously sound vibration is very powerful. Like, why do we chant the Maha Mantra every day? That's what I explain to people when I try to teach them how to chant for the first time. I tell them that sound vibration is very powerful. Right now we're having a peaceful conversation. But if a crazy person came in and started yelling curse words, it would change the whole mood. And people listen to music, and according to the different type of music, they have different emotions. It could even make one angry, it can make one cry, it can make one sad, so many things. So just what to speak of what we hear and speak on a regular basis. Just a few words can cause havoc in our life. If we hear, even if we hear Vaishnava Aparad, it's considered to be offensive, even if we didn't speak it. But if we heard it, it can really contaminate the mind and the consciousness. What to speak if we actually say it, obviously. So I remember reading, I met someone on book distribution one time in the mall, and it was one older, like, Chinese lady, and she was expressing her mind to me, and she was explaining that her mother had passed away recently from, all she had was some simple, like a common cold or a flu or something very simple. But she went to the doctor, and the doctor made a mistake and actually killed her mother on accident. And I looked up at that same day, I looked it up on the internet, and statistics say that the third most cause of death in the USA is from hospital accidents, from the doctor committing a mistake. And it says that over 250,000 people a year die from this. It's amazing. It's like every day, almost like 8 people a day in the whole country. And it was explaining that the main cause for this to happen is a lack of communication between the patient and the doctor. There's a lack of communication, a lack of talking. So I could see, I've experienced this in my life, just from a lack of communication with devotees or anybody can cause friction and tension and confusion. And it can actually lead to Vaishnava Aparad if you don't understand properly. You know, judging someone without understanding where they are, or judging someone based on what you think you heard or what you think they did. Like, I remember one time I was just grabbing some prasadam. After doing service all day, I was grabbing some prasadam, and someone was like chastising me for taking prasadam because they thought I wasn't doing any service. And it's like, you don't do any service, you just take prasadam? My heart, and I just felt, okay, this person's probably having a bad day. But I could see how if someone didn't think like that, you know, that can cause like major conflict in relationship. So even one letter of one word can change a whole meaning to a sentence. It's like if I say lock the van, but if you change the L to S, is sock the van. And if you change the V to an M, sock the man. So in English slang, sock means to like punch. So you meant to say, like, if someone came from another country and they had an accent, they were trying to say lock the van, but they told you to sock the man, you would think that they're telling you to punch some guy. Even in the Guru Vandanam prayers, we say lokana lokira jivana. It actually means that the spiritual master delivers all the jivas in the world. We say lokana lokira jivana, not jivana. Jivana means tongue. I heard this from one devotee. He was saying that if you say jivana without the long I, it means the spiritual master has a large tongue that licks the whole world. But if you say jivana, which is the proper pronunciation, the spiritual master delivers all the jivas in the whole world. So language and communication is very important, in our practice and just in our daily lives, communicating with others and not judging without fully understanding one's situation. Like in that book, The Journey Within by Radhana Swami, just in the very beginning, he explains a story about some lady in an airport. He was on an airport, I forgot where he was going, but there was some lady that was freaking out because the flight was delayed, and she was causing like a huge scene in the airport, and everyone thought she was crazy. And Maharaj was sitting in the corner, just like he's been busy for many days. He just wanted to be left alone and just wait till the flight came. And all of a sudden, this lady turned to him, and he was thinking, oh my God, this crazy lady's coming to me. And she came straight to him, and she started yelling at him, are you like a monk, or you think you're a saint, or what are you doing here? And then he was just trying to like reply very humbly, but the essence of the story was actually that lady had a terminal illness, and if she didn't catch that exact flight, it would change her whole schedule because she was going to a country, I think it was Mexico or something, where those doctors she knew had the cure for her illness and she couldn't find it elsewhere. So if she missed that flight, that would mean she'd probably for sure die. There was like no chance of getting that cure. And her whole family had died, her husband, her children. So she was actually in like a very miserable position. But people were judging her because of the externals. They were criticizing her within her mind, but within their minds, some crazy lady, not knowing her situation. So because we're conditioned souls, you know, we have the four defects. Because we have imperfect senses, therefore we are, or no, because we're an illusion, because we're in the material world, we have imperfect senses. And because of this, we're bound to commit mistakes because of our imperfect senses. But even when people are bound to commit mistakes, they still take the position as a so-called guru or teacher, and thus they want to give information or knowledge, and therefore they're cheaters also. We have cheating propensity. I had this experience the other night, not last night, but the night before. I woke up at 11 p.m. because there was a really loud sound on Watsik Avenue. I don't know if anybody else heard it, but it started like really like from a distance, and then it got closer. It was like, it was a really annoying sound, and I was laying down. I didn't know what it was. And in my mind, I immediately speculated, because my ears are imperfect, my mind is imperfect. I was thinking maybe, okay, first of all, it might be a flying saucer. It's maybe an alien. And then I was thinking, no, actually, it sounds like a missile. It sounded like a missile coming. And I was thinking, okay, this might be it. You know, so I was thinking of Krishna. I was thinking maybe the missile was going to blow everything up. But then I was thinking the third option was maybe it was just like a car that was maybe like the wheels blew up and it was grinding on its rims. And then I came outside the next morning and there's a big screech tire mark throughout the whole Watsika. I don't know what happened to that car, but it's okay. So it wasn't a flying saucer. Okay. So in the purport of chapter 2, Prabhupada, that the seventh verse of chapter 2, Prabhupada says, because we have these four defects, therefore it's necessary for someone who's serious about spirituality to approach a spiritual master for proper guidance. And we should hear constantly Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's memories, everything having to do with the pure devotees, so that we know what to do, how to react in certain situations, and what would Prabhupada do in this situation. Like, for example, he didn't like when people wasted electricity. Many examples of that, where you chastise devotees for leaving on lights, for leaving on water. He didn't want to waste Krishna's energy. He didn't want to harm any living entity. He would see a little bug in his room, and he would ask his disciple to go see if the bug is okay, and to give the bug prasadam. So, what to speak of harming any insect unnecessarily? Like, I've seen some devotees think that that's okay, but it's not really Prabhupada's mood. You know, we should be kind to every living entity. And to know his books is very important for ourselves and for others, so we can speak the right thing, and so we ourselves can understand the right thing. Like, I've been here a few times, like, people on the Vyasasan said some things that seemed a little bit off, you know, it wasn't like a major thing. But I've even had, when I was a new bhakta, I remember one devotee was telling me something that didn't really seem right to me. And he was telling me, maybe I shouldn't say it because he might hear this class. I'll just say it anyways. He was saying, I think because he wanted me to do service for him and help him out. But I was like chanting my rounds, and I was trying to finish my 16 rounds because I was doing service all day. And he was telling me, but chanting, you're begging for service. And when I come and I ask you to do service, you don't want to do it. He said, chanting is not service. He said, chanting is asking for service. But then I learned later on, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, it's like one of the main limbs of our bhakti practice is chanting. A few things. So it's important for us to understand the books ourselves so that we're not bewildered from what other people speak. Srila Prabhupada even wanted kids to hear. He said, this process is for everyone. He said, this process is for everyone, and even the children can chant and dance in ecstasy. And he was explaining that at the age of 5, that the children should go to Gurukul and start at an early age. So there's no minimum age to hear, actually. Prahlad Maharaj actually heard within the womb and remembered. And, just give me a few minutes. I'm so sorry. I just have a few more things to say. So that's the nature of children is actually to be inquisitive. It's the nature of every jiva soul to try to inquire the absolute truth. Like one time I was distributing books. I had a table. I had Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Krishna book. I had all the books out there. One little boy was coming up to my table, and he was asking like really intelligent questions. He was pointing to Krishna. Who is that? Pointing to Radharani. Who's that? He even asked me, what happens if they combined? And then I pointed to Lord Chaitanya. I said, this is what happens. It's like amazing. And then he was asked, pointing at Nityananda, and he just kept going on and on, just trying to figure out what's the meaning of all these books. So in the same way, there's no minimum age to hear. There's also no minimum age to speak. Like Shukadev Goswami was 16 years old. Prahlad Maharaj was like 4 or 5. He was speaking to his classmates. And another time at a book table, I had this Indian family came up, and this little girl, she was like 5 years old. She came down and sat right next to me, just like spontaneously. And she started talking to me. She started teaching me about the Kaliya pastime of Krishna dancing on Kaliya's hoods. And she said it was such a pure heart. And I just sat there and listened like a Bhagavatam class. She's like a pure devotee. It's like amazing. So, one other thing I want to say is that also not limited to species. Like we heard Balagopal Prabhu the other day, he was saying how the bull of Madhvacharya became Jayatirtha in his next life and wrote commentaries on Madhvacharya's work because the bull was very attentive in hearing Madhvacharya. And also the animals of the Charikanda forest, they were all chanting in ecstasy. Bart Maharaj was a deer. One time, again, on a book table, I had this little... I was chanting japa, distributing books, waiting for people to come. This little fly kept landing on the corner of the book and listening to me chant. Then he would go away. He kept coming back, the same bug. And I understood that he's attracted to the sound vibration. So no living entity is actually bereft of devotional service. In Riverside, I met this one like punker guy. He was homeless and he was completely drunk. But I was teaching him. He was really humble though, and very nice and sweet. So I was teaching him how to chant. Fast forward like 8 months later, I saw the same guy in Haight and Ashbury Street, San Francisco, while we were distributing books there a few months ago. I saw the same guy. Immediately when he saw me, he raised his arms in the air and started chanting the Maha Mantra, like immediately upon seeing me. So just from the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, sitting alone under a tree in New York City chanting the Maha Mantra, he plants a seed where a whole tree can grow, where fruits can grow in the form of his disciples. And from those fruits, more seeds are planted and trees are grown, etc. So this is the parampara. And we want to show you one video. It's 60 seconds, even less, maybe 30 seconds. This is the power of the Maha Mantra. If we just go out there and chant, it's broadcast throughout the whole world. And this has happened many times. So this video, we went out and chanted at Venice Beach, and someone recorded this on his phone. He put it on the internet. It has almost 400,000 views just in a couple months. Okay, you can play it now. Jai. It's the power of the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Jai.
Ishvara Paranam Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radhi Govindam Savakarana Karanam Chintamani Prakarasadma Sukalpa Vriksha Laksha Vritesa Suribir Apalavayantam Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasam Brahma Sevyamanam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Venam Kvanantam Aravindalayakta Taksham Vahapatasam Asitam Bhutasungarangam Kantarva Koti Kamani Vishashesha Shobhat Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Alola chara klavasar valyalal vimamsi ratna gadam pranalakeli kalavilamsa shama tribanga lalitam niyata prakasham govindam adi purusham samam bhajami angyani yasya sakalindriti vritti manti pashyanti panti karayanti chiram jaganti Ananda Chinmaya Sarujvala Vigrahasya Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Advaitam Achyutam Adinam Anantarupam Adhyam Purana Purusam Navayovanam Cha Vedesu Durlabha Mamadurlabha Matma Bhakto Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Pantastu koti satavatsara prangmamangyo vayoratapi manaso puni pungvananam sopi yastiya pradapasya machintya tatve govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami eko piyasya rachitam jagadanta kotim yachcha kriyasti jagananchayantaranta andantarasta pranamochayantarastanam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami yad bhava bhava tadino majinasta yadvai sampraya rupa manimansa yayana